Good morning. It's 8 minutes after 7. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent on The Morning Show. Two of Donald Trump's campaign aides have been charged in connection with the probe into Russian interference in last year's election. A third pled guilty to lying to the FBI. We discuss the significance of these first charges in this months-long investigation and what they may suggest about where the investigation is headed. I'm joined this morning by Charles Franklin, the director of the Marquette University Law School Poll and a professor of law and public policy. He's the co-founder of Pollster.com and the founder of PollsandVotes.com. Charles Franklin, welcome back to The Morning Show.
Good morning, John.
How do you fit all that on a business card?
It helps to cut it down a little bit, you know.
Yeah, really small font. Before we get to my our questions for you, I want to give our audience, I want to prime the pump a little bit. I hope we get a bunch of calls today, and I think we will. What's your reaction, listeners, to these first indictments in the Russia probe? Should President Trump dismiss or cooperate with Mr. Mueller? And should Trump be worried about these charges, or do you think the probe is a witch hunt? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. You can post to the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Now, while I get my breath back, I'll ask a question. So, Charles Franklin, how big a deal are these first indictments?
Well, I think they're a fairly big deal because of what they say about the investigation. The White House was quick yesterday to point out that the charges against Manafort and Paul Manafort, the former campaign manager, and Rick Gates, Manafort's longtime business partner and also a member of the campaign staff, that the charges against them were related to their business activities, not related to their role directly in the campaign. And so the White House used that to say that this separated them from the campaign. However, right after that, we got the release of the guilty plea by George Papadopoulos, a foreign policy advisor to the campaign. And Papadopoulos has pled guilty to making false statements to the FBI, but he is now cooperating with the investigation and gives an account of his contact with Russian sources, Russian-related people, who worked to set up a meeting between the campaign and Russian officials. That meeting, certainly not at the level of Trump, never occurred. However, it also involves information that the Russians had, Clinton emails, presumably the ones from the Democratic National Committee that later did become public, and that that information was given to Papadopoulos early in the spring, in March and April, when this began of 2016. So that does go to someone in the campaign directly dealing with Russians who claim to have information damaging to Clinton. Mm-hmm. And there are emails, according to the guilty plea, that show that Papadopoulos informed his campaign superiors of this information and had ongoing discussions with them about it. So that doesn't say what the campaign did with it, and a meeting between Trump and Russians never took place. But it does put someone within the campaign directly in touch with Russians and reporting that information back to the campaign. So that's somewhat more damaging to what was initially said by the White House, that none of this was in any way related to the campaign.
And we do have a clip from the White House Press Secretary, Sarah Sanders, distancing the White House from this whole thing. Why don't we, let's play that. Let's listen to what Sarah had to say.
today's announcement has nothing to do with the president, has nothing to do with the president's campaign or campaign activity. The real collusion scandal, as we've said several times before, has everything to do with the Clinton campaign, Fusion GPS, and Russia. There's clear evidence of the Clinton campaign colluding with Russian intelligence to spread disinformation and smear the president to influence the election. We've been saying from day one there's been no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion, and nothing in the indictment today changes that at all.
So you commented earlier that the White House distanced itself from Paul Manafort, saying, hey, this indictment is about something that happened before he was involved in the campaign. But what about the rest of what she had to say?
You know, technically, she said at the end, in the indictment, and that's exactly right. I did read all 31 pages of the indictment. And Trump's name doesn't appear, and the connection to the campaign is not made an issue in that indictment. But the separate guilty plea by Papadopoulos is the thing that, as I said before we listened to the tape, that is not mentioned in by Sarah Sanders yesterday, and is the thing that, as I say, does put the connection directly in the campaign. Now, the White House has said at various times that Papadopoulos was a low-level, unpaid volunteer, but that guilty plea points out that the campaign itself put out a statement mentioning him as part of their foreign policy advisory team in March. And so there is no question that there actually was a connection of Papadopoulos to the campaign, and his emails to members of the campaign staff do appear to discuss a possible trip to Russia, and certainly make mention of emails and the Clinton emails, and possibly damaging information. Now, the document itself, the guilty plea itself, points out this is only some of what Mr. Papadopoulos has been willing to has disclosed, and so there's other things that we don't know from that document that will surely be part of the bigger case. So we don't know where this is headed. We don't know what other indictments may or may not be coming,
if any.
And you know, it's important to say that indictments are not the same as a guilty conviction. These are allegations by the Mueller investigation. These are not proven.
And that's an excellent point. And I wanted to, before we get any further, talk about some of the more technical aspects of this without getting too far into the legal weeds. These charges came from a federal grand jury. So let's take a moment to kind of talk about that process. We know, our audience is probably not an expert on how the court system works, but can you describe just how a grand jury is different from a regular trial jury? What's its function, and how does it work?
I will give my best on this, but remember, and your audience should remember, I have a PhD in political science, and though I teach at a law school, I am not a lawyer. So,
and you're not playing one on the radio.
And I'm definitely not trying to play one on the radio.
Got it.
But a grand jury is a group of citizens to whom a prosecutor presents their evidence and their theory of the case. Here's what we think happened. Here are the facts as we've been able to establish them. And here are the laws that were broken, and we make these allegations. If you, the grand jury, find them convincing, then you issue an indictment, and that then opens the door to a trial and what we see in Perry Mason, if we're old enough to remember Perry Mason.
Oh, my goodness. I feel so old right now.
Yeah, I know. Well, welcome to the club, John.
Yeah, I hear you.
But so these are allegations only. There's a famous amusing quote by a defense attorney saying that a prosecutor can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. I doubt that prosecutors see it quite that way.
Probably not.
But it is worth saying that If you read through the indictment, you will see the specific things that the Mueller lawyers say were done by Manafort and Gates. And you'll also see in the guilty plea the actions that Papadopoulos is said to have taken.
Mm-hmm.
Those have not faced the counterpunches from defense attorneys.
Right.
That happens later in the trial phase, and so the defense has not had a chance to speak to these.
All right, so I'm glad, though, that we did take a moment to clarify that. We're talking about the indictments that were handed down yesterday and what they might mean going forward. Will there be any more, or could this just be it? And we're talking about that with Charles Franklin and with you. If you choose to join us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent on The Morning Show. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network. The news is next. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network of WPR. This hour we're talking about the indictments handed down yesterday in the federal grand jury probe into possible Russian influence in last year's election. And my guest is Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School Poll, a professor of law and public policy. He's the co-founder of Pollster.com and the founder of PollsandVotes.com. He is not a lawyer. By the way, just for the sake of full disclosure, my degrees are in history, political science, and mass communication. I have no degree in radio talk show hosting, but I am playing one for you today. And before we go any further, a caller, you know, one of the things I really like about being on the radio in Wisconsin Public Radio is how alert our listeners are to what we actually say. And so I want to address something that one of our listeners heard and called me on it this morning before we move on. John from Milwaukee called. He's concerned that I used the phrase first indictment and that it shows a bias on my part because we don't absolutely know that there won't be that there will be any more. The assumption is, which is what I made, that there will be more given the length and the depth of the investigation, but it's possible that there won't be any. And so I was called on that and point taken. I won't do it again. All right. Now, meanwhile, back at the program, 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join our discussion. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at WPR Mornings. The Paul Manafort briefly managed Donald Trump's presidential campaign, and his associate Rick Gates pleaded not guilty yesterday afternoon, and they face a number of charges ranging from conspiracy against the United States and conspiracy to launder money. President Trump tweeted, "Sorry, but this is years ago before Paul Manafort was part of the Trump campaign," and he's also tweeted this morning, "Few people knew the young low-level volunteer named George, who has already proven to be a liar. Check the Dems." That is President Trump's response. Based on what we know from the documents released yesterday, is this more Paul Manafort's problem than Trump's? Just those indictments, but you commented earlier on the campaign volunteer one being a problem for them. But address that for just a moment, and then let's move on.
Sure. Well, as I said, the Manafort and Gates allegations are about their business practices, holding money in overseas accounts, evading taxes. Those are the allegations. Money laundering are all the allegations in that document, but it goes to work they did independent of the campaign. With the volunteer named George, as the president puts it, Papadopoulos. There you have information that goes much more directly to campaign activities, and specifically that Papadopoulos shared the information about his Russian contacts with more senior members of the campaign. Those issues are not spelled out in detail, except that the information exchange, the awareness, the contacts are mentioned in that guilty plea document. So that's what we know at this point.
Okay. In the Sarah Sanders clip that we heard earlier and in subsequent coverage of that press conference, we heard mentioned that the White House position is that the real collusion was between Russia and the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee. There was a news story that came out in the Washington Post last week that a lawyer for Clinton and the party hired Fusion GPS to conduct the research that led to the infamous Trump dossier. Before that, Fusion was hired by a Republican outfit to do opposition research on Trump during the GOP primary season. Trump and his supporters jumped on that story as proof that any collusion was between Clinton and the Democrats and the Russians. What's your read on that development?
Yeah, and that is something that they are pushing very hard as a counterpoint to the Mueller investigation. I think the extent to which any of the activity in the Trump dossier, or as we're calling it, and who funded it and how it evolved over time, as you mentioned, initially it was apparently begun, or at least the company that was involved was hired by a conservative newspaper in Washington. I think that's still a developing story, but it's certainly clear that the White House wants to emphasize that as part of their message that it wasn't us, it was them. You should be looking at them.
And there was also a Reuters story about a prominent Washington lobbyist, Tony Podesta, who stepped down from his lobbying firm, Podesta Group, in connection with the investigation that included examining his company's ties to Paul Manafort and some things that were going on involving lobbying on behalf of a foreign government without registering. The name Podesta is connected to a Democratic campaign politics. Anything there that we should think about as well?
Yes, it is a remarkable set of connections among Washington lobbyists and power players. Tony Podesta, who resigned from his company yesterday, is the brother of John Podesta, who was Clinton's campaign manager. So that may be why the name is familiar to people. Tony Podesta's company apparently was one of the companies hired by Paul Manafort to conduct lobbying efforts on behalf of the Ukrainian president and some organizations associated with the Ukrainian political parties. That is part of the indictment against Manafort for not disclosing or not filing paperwork saying that he was lobbying for a foreign entity, which is a federal law and requirement. Apparently, Podesta's group was one of the two companies that the indictment says Manafort hired, paid from overseas accounts to do lobbying on behalf of these Ukrainian interests. The indictment itself does not name the two companies that Manafort hired to actually do the lobbying, but it's now widely being reported that Podesta's group was one of those. So again, something directly connected to the Ukrainian connection that Manafort was so involved with, but not connected to the Trump campaign, so far as we know, in any way.
Okay. Let's go to the phones and take some calls. Scott is with us in Columbus. Scott, hello. Welcome to the morning show.
And good morning. Thank you. In the coverage that I heard, the money laundering and tax evasion Manafort indictments covered a period from 2006 to 2016. And I'm wondering, in all of that news coverage, why no one asked the question, which seems obvious to me, where during more than a decade were the IRS and law enforcement while these financial crimes were being committed? probably avoiding taxes to the tune of millions of dollars. And I think Mr. Franklin will recall the case of Tom DeLay, another very high-level political operative who was charged with money laundering. He never spent one day in jail. And my point is, it seems that in America, if you are wealthy and well-connected, you can commit financial crimes, do tax evasion, launder money to the tune of something like $75 million, and never be prosecuted. You know, I'm just wondering, how that's supposed to work. I guess you just
all right, Scott.
Careful.
We get it. Let's let Charles Franklin respond to that, and then we have some other callers who want to join us. You could be one of them at 800-642-1234. So, Charles Franklin, why didn't the IRS or law enforcement notice what was going on here until just now?
I think that's actually a very interesting question, and I don't certainly know the answer to that. It is clear from the indictment, the allegations, that this was an activity that took place over a long amount of time, involved a lot of money, done through corporations that, or limited partnerships or other kinds of organizations that may, in fact, be hard to trace. But the indictment itself is a bit of a tutorial in how to get paid overseas, keep your money overseas, and then let those overseas entities directly buy you Range Rover cars and $1 million worth of antique carpets and rugs, mm-hmm. which are part of the allegations. You can certainly see how those connections would be indirect. And so if Manafort were not being investigated by a team like Mueller's that would really probe very deeply into his financial affairs, they didn't come up. But how it is that the federal government, the IRS, is unable to detect these things autonomously, that I think is an interesting side question.
Well, just off the top of my head, it would seem to me that the level of individual scrutiny that would be required would make most of the rest of us who aren't laundering money really, really uncomfortable.
One would think so. It also certainly says that these things become visible when someone pays attention. The question is, when does someone pay attention to?
Yeah. And in this case, someone did, and the indictments are the result. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the program. We have another caller on the line. Let's go to Randy, who's calling us from Kewaskum. Randy, good morning.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. One thing I haven't heard mentioned, the activities that Manafort and Page have been charged with took place during a time long before they had any connection to the Trump campaign, but he had very significant ties to the Podesta brothers, who are involved in all levels of the Democratic Party. And there were, Manafort isn't a necessarily a Republican operative. He's somebody that kind of works for himself on all different levels, including at a long period of time with high-ranking Democrats. Podestas are connected directly to Hillary Clinton.
Okay. Randy, we get it. Thank you. Charles Franklin?
Yeah, we were talking earlier about this, that the connection is that Manafort hired the Podesta lobbying company, the Tony Podesta lobbying company, to lobby on behalf of the Ukrainian president, some Ukrainian parties, and that is the origin of the Podesta involvement in this. And as I said, the Podesta's firm is not referred to directly in the indictment. That comes out of the subsequent reporting based on this.
Okay, Randy, thanks for the call. 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. We're talking about indictments that were handed down yesterday that came out of the Mueller investigation of possible Russian interference in last year's election. We are, I guess, awaiting developments to see what comes next. One thing that came out yesterday after the indictments, Democrats warned President Trump that he'd better not fire Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Virginia Senator Mark Warner, the top Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee, said in a statement that it's imperative that Congress take action now to protect the independence of the special counsel, wherever or however high his investigation may lead. Sanders said yesterday that President Trump has no intention of firing Mueller. What sort of action could Congress take here, Charles Franklin?
Well, it's it's complicated. If you go back to Watergate and Nixon's firing of Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor there, what resulted from that was a firestorm of congressional criticism. Nixon quickly had to appoint or did appoint a replacement for Cox, who eventually did indeed pursue the case. And so in that, firing the investigator may have simply added fuel to the fire. I think what you're hearing from people on Capitol Hill, especially Democrats, though there are some Republicans saying the same thing, is that any attempt to stop the investigation raises questions of obstruction of justice and thus pours fuel on the fire. The White House has denied that there are plans to remove Mueller. I think we are best advised to wait and see. But certainly in Nixon's case, firing Archibald Cox did not accomplish the goals of the Nixon of President Nixon.
Senator Warner also called on members of both parties to make clear to President Trump that issuing pardons to any of his associates or himself would be unacceptable and result in immediate bipartisan action by Congress. This is a scenario that's been spun out in the media over the last few months. How do you imagine a potential pardon would go down with the American public?
I think it would be challenging for the president to justify pardoning these folks. If the investigation leads to more serious charges against other people who are more clearly acting for the Trump campaign, then those things would be political hot potatoes that would certainly put the White House on the defensive to explain its actions, to put it simply. It would also be political, as you see in those statements from Democratic members of Congress, for them to pursue their arguments and also for Republicans to either defend them or also argue against such pardons. I think we are ahead of ourselves in this, except for the fact that President Trump has removed an FBI director who was in charge of this investigation. And so in that, it becomes less hypothetical than it might be otherwise. And it does reflect the uncertainty of what is it that the president might be willing to do if he feels pressured by this investigation. But I think we don't have direct hints that anything is okay. Planned along those lines at this point.
We're just about at news time, Charles Franklin. But when we come back, I want you to talk about what you see as the impact of this Russia story on the campaign trail. Midterm elections are next year. So when we come back, we'll talk about that. And we'll take more calls at 800-642-1234. Charles Franklin is director of the Marquette University Law School Poll and a professor of law and public policy. We're going to take a break for the news, and we'll be back with more of the morning show. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. The indictments are in, and two of them anyway, in the Mueller investigation of collusion, possible interference in our last election by the Russians. Will there be more? Are these just the first, or are we done? We won't know for some time, but we're talking about it. My guest is Charles Franklin, the director of the Marquette University Law School poll and a professor of law and public policy. 800-642-1234, the number to call to join the program. We do have some callers. We will get to them in just a moment. Still place a spot for you if you'd care to call right now, 800-642-1234. Give us your reaction to these indictments in the Russia probe. What do you think? Should President Trump dismiss Mueller or cooperate? And should he be worried about these charges? Or do you think this probe is just a witch hunt? Again, 800-642-1234. So, Charles Franklin, I teased to this before the break, so I'd better deliver. I have to support the lead here. Do you think, let me ask you this. Do you think that the this investigation, this grand jury thing, the indictments and all of that are going to have any kind of impact on next year's midterm elections? And if so, what and how much?
I think to the extent that they evolve and we do see a succession of indictments that develop the case that the campaign, or at least leaders of the campaign, like Paul Manafort, for example, who was campaign chairman for a little while, or others, were involved in things with Russia or with other activities, I think those become a drain on the president and thus the president's party. We don't know how they're going to develop or what the pace may be. Observers have pointed to these first moves as suggesting more to come, but that's speculation and we should recognize it as such. Well, I think you also see the pushback from the White House to see what the counter narrative from the White House will be as well. Sorry.
Yeah, that reminds me of the old lawyer joke. If you ask a lawyer, what color is that house? The lawyer will say, it's white on this side.
A very good lawyerly-like statement.
Yeah.
I think we have to say that things are still developing on this front. It's probably a long ways before the Mueller investigation is concluded, and we don't know what will come out, whether it will in fact develop into major charges that go directly to the campaign, or peripheral charges like those that Manafort and Gates now face that do predate the campaign and are seemingly unrelated to the campaign. Okay. Midterm elections, though, normally are bad news for the incumbent party, for the party of the White House. That party almost always loses seats in the House of Representatives and mostly loses seats in Senate elections. So in that sense, Republicans are facing a midterm year that historically we would expect to be a question of how big the losses are rather than whether or not there are losses. So whether it's this investigation or other developments or the economy or the president's job approval numbers, which have fallen off a bit lately, all of those things contribute to the midterm. And the question is, what are the issues that are on voters' minds at the time that we go to the polls? I guess I can't quite say next November. But November a year from now.
A year from November, yeah. And of course, a famous person once said, all politics are local, or is local. I always get that wrong. Let's take a call before I get any further into the semantic weeds. Patrick is with us from Richland County. Patrick, good morning.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Great show. To gain some credibility back with the American people, with this Washington to come down hard on Trump and his group. I mean, after all, they have shown such contempt for the rule of law and done such damage to the institutions of our democracy. Trump has insulted everybody. He has no friends in Washington. Wouldn't this be a great opportunity to come down hard on these people, to show the American people we're serious. We value our democracy.
Patrick, thanks for the call. Charles Franklin?
I think you could argue that the Mueller investigation is the institutional embodiment of coming down hard, of pursuing a case with real vigor. Again, we don't know what the outcome is and who ultimately will be implicated in it. But I do think it is an example of how the institutions of the country, the justice institutions, are responding to the Russian activities during the 2016 election. If we can kind of rewind a little bit, let's remember that this investigation begins during 2016 as the FBI and others are developing evidence that the Russians are actively trying to influence our elections. Now, we're seeing play out here the development of the evidence for that and how it may or may not have affected campaigns in the country. So I do think that is going on. I'd say that on the other side, the more political reaction, it's to be expected that the opposition party, Democrats now, will push back hard against Trump on a wide variety of fronts, not just this. I do think it's important to realize that the Republican Party is also fractured along various dimensions over Trump, as we see Republican senators speaking out against Trump, but recognize that that's still a small minority of Republican senators who, in fact, are mostly people who have announced their retirement after this their current term.
Yeah.
So I do think that some of the pushback you're talking about is occurring. It's occurring in both parties, and it's worth it to separate a little bit the origins of the Russian investigation, because it predates the Trump administration and goes to what the Russians did in this country to interfere or influence our election, and that's somewhat separate.
Okay, we're going to take a couple of calls back-to-back here, so just a heads up. Lou in Oconomowoc will be first, and then Joan from Eau Claire. Lou, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hi there. Great conversation this morning. I had a couple comments. Well, first off, you know, and this wasn't really the brunt of it, what I was wishing to say, but they keep talking about Mr. The gentleman that was just indicted, him and his co-conspirator.
Paul Manafort is who
Mr. Manafort. Yeah, I'm sorry. Mr. Manafort, really, they keep saying that he was just there for a short time, but I believe he didn't leave or volunteer to leave the campaign until Mr. Trump had secured his nomination in the Republican primaries. And that's just my recollection. But my big point was, I think the Manafort deal here, while it's a big issue, I think the Papadopoulos issue is really the big shoe that dropped. As I understand it, he was actually approached last summer, and he has been working with the FBI since he was approached, and basically he's pled guilty since then. But during this period of time, I believe he could, you know, the first guy to the table gets flipped, and you don't know what he's been doing or what the FBI's been doing with him. He could theoretically have been wearing wires. Mm-hmm. And sitting in on meetings or having phone calls with people involved.
Okay. Thanks, Lou. We're almost out of time. I want to get to Joan's comment and then get Charles Franklin's response. Joan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you. Democracy in action here today and yesterday. Way to go, Bob Mueller and Bob Mueller team. It's really this research, getting a hold of what was happening with those shell companies on Paul Manafort's part, the money laundering, not to mention keeping this a secret with Papadopoulos. And great job, Bob Mueller. Wonderful day. Democracy in action. This is an historic moment. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Joan, thanks. So, Charles Franklin, you made these kind of touched on these points earlier, but it was a real piece of strategy, I guess, a good one to keep Papadopoulos under wraps until yesterday.
I think perhaps a strategy. I think as we talked early in the show, the reason that Papadopoulos is important from the broader picture is that the allegations of what he did or the statements of what he did are within the campaign and are directly related to the Russians in a way that the Manafort and Gates charges are not. And so that is important for the White House's argument that this was unrelated to the campaign. The Papadopoulos case is related to the campaign. And it's not so much that Papadopoulos was a top-ranking official in the campaign, he doesn't appear to be, but that he communicated his information to people in the campaign who were top officials. And so this is the part that we don't know how it's going to develop, but it does put the connection to the campaign clearly in the guilty plea from Papadopoulos. And so that, I think, is the reason why it's important. You're seeing commentators and news stories pointing that out this morning.
Have less than a minute or so left in the program. Last question. Sarah Sanders said yesterday she expects this investigation to wrap up soon. As we close, do you see that happening, or is it your sense that this is going to drag on for a while?
I think it's going to go on for a while. I think people are commenting that Mueller is moving faster than past investigations have. So in that sense, perhaps it does wrap up relatively sooner than, say, the Whitewater investigation back in the Clinton administration that went on forever. But wrapping up quickly or wrapping up with null findings, I don't think we see the evidence of that yet. And again, if we're a little patient, we'll find out over the next weeks and months just what kind of case Bob Mueller really is developing here.
Charles Franklin, thank you very much for joining me this hour.
Thank you, John. I enjoyed it.
Charles Franklin is the director of the Marquette University Law School Poll and a professor of law and public policy. He's the co-founder of Pollster.com and the founder of PollsandVotes.com. This hour was produced by Bill Martins and Keely Multina with technical direction by Dean Knetter. I'm John Munson, in for Kate Archer Kent on The Morning Show. Stick around after the news. It's On Your Money with Kevin McKinley. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.